Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, May 28th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Hundreds of school children and local people stage a peaceful march in Harare, protesting against the government's decision to introduce grade 7 examination fees and increase ordinary level examination fees.
The introduction of grade 7 examination fees is for us as the people of Zimbabwe a sign that the government of Zimbabwe does not want really to lessen the burden.
Zimbabwe says it does not have money to raise salaries of workers due to lack of funds.
As far as we are concerned, we are very suspicious of this move because we are very disturbed to say when these things are supposed to be put on table for thorough discussion and thorough interrogation by the worker side, that did not happen.
And the Zimbabwean banker and former deputy president of the African Development Bank, Thomas Sikala, has been eliminated from the presidential race of the AFDB. Hundreds of school children and their parents today staged a peaceful march in Zimbabwe's capital city, Harare, protesting against the government's decision to introduce grade 7 examination fees. They were also not happy about the country's move to increase ordinary level examination fees from $13 to $15 per subject starting this year. Our correspondent Ivan Chifera has more details.
Those are some of the hundreds of school children and parents from all over the city who marched from the Zimbabwe Human Rights Association or ZimRights offices demanding that the government should drop its plans to introduce grade 7 examination fees. The placard-waving parents and children chanted revolutionary songs and denounced Primary and Secondary Education Minister Lazarus Dokora before handing a petition to his officials at the Harare Provincial Education Offices. Protest organizers said they were barred from marching to Dokora's offices as it is closer to the Defense Headquarters and President Robert Mugabe's offices. ZimRights Director Okay Machisa said they decided to stage this protest after realizing that most Zimbabweans are currently struggling to make ends meet and cannot afford to fork out any more money to pay for new and hiked examination fees and related costs.
The introduction of grade 7 examination fees is for us as the people of Zimbabwe a sign that the government of Zimbabwe does not want really to lessen the burden. They are piling burdens on daily basis. And therefore, we are saying we request and we demand that the government realize that they need to withdraw the introduction of grade 7 examination fees.
A parent participating in the demonstration, Admire Munava, said it's unreasonable for Dokora to introduce grade 7 examination fees or increasing ordinary level fees when parents are facing serious economic hardships.
I think what ZimRights is doing is a noble idea. They are doing what they are supposed to be doing, defending people's rights, including the children's rights. If you look at what they put in the constitution, the policymakers themselves, they even said free education for all. And now they are going against their own constitution.
He said Dokora's plans violate the constitution, which compels government to take appropriate measures to promote free and compulsory education for children. Another protester, Michael Mabwe, concurred, saying President Mugabe should fire Dokora for allegedly failing the nation.
And we are appealing to all Zimbabwean citizens to resist this move with the contempt it deserves. We are calling upon all Zimbabweans to rally together to fight this diabolic, unjust and uncalled for stance to introduce grade 7 examination fees.
The minister has been criticized by most Zimbabweans for his plans, which many say will result in thousands of pupils failing to write grade 7 examinations if his scheme is implemented. If Dokora gets his way, grade 7 pupils will pay $3 per subject in their final examination. This will be the first time since independence that grade 7 pupils will pay for final examinations. The grade 7 certificate is used for securing a place in secondary schools. Dokora refused to comment today, referring all questions to the ministry spokesperson, only identified as a Mr. Zuma, whose mobile phone was switched off. Parliament of Zimbabwe and the Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission were also petitioned by ZimRights, parents and the children. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Zimbabwe says it does not have money to raise salaries of workers due to lack of funds. According to the Herald newspaper, this announcement is contained in a working paper submitted by state representatives at a recent joint negotiating forum attended by workers and government representatives. The government says the state salaries bill has shot up sixfold over the past 6 years, from $381 million to $2.2 billion. Secretary General Raymond Majongwe of the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe tells Studio 7 they are not happy with the cancellation of today's meeting, in which they were expected to discuss salary issues.
We were advised through a WhatsApp message from the upper leadership that they postponed the meeting with government for reasons that we are not aware of. Because last week, when we finished the joint negotiating council meeting, we agreed that we were going to meet on Thursday. But to our surprise, when we were waiting for us to go and attend this meeting, they only advised in the morning today that the meeting had been postponed. And we are equally surprised because it appears this is a necessary delay. And already government has taken a position that there are no salary increments. When in actual fact, this is supposed to be a product of dialogue. So we don't know whether this is connivance between the upper leadership and government, or it's purely a coincidence. But as far as we are concerned, we are very suspicious of this move. Because we are very disturbed to say, when these things are supposed to be put on table for thorough discussion and thorough interrogation by the worker side, that did not happen.
Would you say the issue of salaries could have contributed to the postponement of this meeting?
Apparently, one wants to say it appears on the front page of the paper, and people have officially commented on it. The apex position in terms of the response that we would have given to government.
That was Raymond Majongwe, Secretary General of the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe, on the line with Studio 7 from Harare.
A Zimbabwean banker and former deputy president of the African Development Bank, Thomas Sikala, has been eliminated from the presidential race of the AFDB as a woman minister from Cape Verde is in a striking distance to land the hot seat. VOA's Lino Modu reports that Sikala lost in the initial stages of the race in Abidjan. The contestants are drawn from Nigeria, Chad, Zimbabwe, Cape Verde, Sierra Leone, Mali, and Tunisia. She speaks to Studio 7's Gibbs Dube about the remaining three candidates trying to replace outgoing AFDB President Dr. Donald Kaberuka of Rwanda.
Voting started this morning. The first round for the elimination of the candidate from Sierra Leone, he was the first one out. But as of now, three candidates remain: Chad, Cape Verde, and Nigeria.
So are you saying that the Zimbabwean has been eliminated?
Yes, Zimbabwe has been eliminated. So are the four candidates.
So who do you think is going to actually win this kind of race?
Well, listen, I cannot tell you who will win. I do not have that power. But just according to what, with regard to what people are telling me, the comments, it's funny because these three countries where these three candidates from Chad, Cape Verde, and Nigeria are the three people that kept coming back. Every time I spoke to different people, especially Cape Verde was the name that kept coming back. No matter what statistic people were telling me, no matter what opinion people were giving me, Kate Birdie always came back in all the different opinions. So I think she's in good position. Nigeria also, I think, is one of the favorites. Chad, of course, is in the race, and we never know. So at this point, I think the three of them have equal chance. But to tell you the truth, Cape Verde keeps coming back. So I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying this is from what I hear.
When are we likely to get the results?
We are hoping that we will have some final results today. However, there is another round that is planned for tomorrow. So if we have a president today, then we will be good. This is the second round. Three rounds have been prepared for this. So we're hoping to have a candidate, to have a president today, so that by the closing ceremony, we will know we will lead the AFDB for the next 5 years. And let me just tell you that Cape Verde is a lady. Not that it matters, but I just wanted to tell you that she's the only lady in the race. So that's good. And to tell you a little bit about the candidate, Nigeria Akinwumi Adesina is currently the Minister of Agriculture and Rural Development of the Federal Republic of Nigeria. Cape Verde Christina Duarte is Minister of Finance and Planning. And from Chad, Koje Bedumra from Chad is the Minister of Finance and Budget. So as you can see, the three of them are ministers of their respective government.
That was VOA Slino Madu speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Abidjan, Cote d'Ivoire. The president of the bank spearheads development activities in Africa and beyond.
Studio 7 wants to hear from you. What issues matter to you? What's happening in your community? Tell us about it in your own voice using WhatsApp. Simply speak into the phone and record your message, starting with your name and your location and then your message. You can even greet your family and friends. Send your messages to our WhatsApp. Get ready for the number. It's +1 202 465 0318. That number again is +1 202 465 0318. Send us your audio messages right now.
Vice President Pelekezela Mpoko says Zimbabwean artists should treat art as a business and not only as a source of entertainment. Some artists in various nations are making millions of dollars in this multi-billion dollar industry. Our correspondent Arthur Jigoriwa has more details from the Mashonaland West provincial capital.
Mr. Mpoko told guests at a ceremony to mark Zimbabwe's Culture Week that artists should learn some entrepreneurship skills in order to benefit from their work.
It is high time there is a shift in regarding arts and culture only as a source of entertainment, but critically as a profession that is contributing to the gross domestic product and fulfilling the demand in our country's economy.
Zimbabwe had a cultural week last week in which the country focused on empowering artists and driving money from their activities. The vice president urged artists to engage in business and make some risky investment so as to generate money. He took a swipe at promoters for taking advantage of artists to make money for themselves while artists are wallowing in poverty.
Let us desist from the tendency of manipulating artists only for personal gain, without them getting reward for their artists, which we admire from time to time.
One of the artists, Tendai Chinoda, recited a poem soon after Mr. Mpoko's remarks to mark Zimbabwe's Culture Week.
They are selling tomatoes, they are selling vegetables, we are selling our art. Vachele, art is our business. Vachele, the sun rises for every artist, but not every artist rises with the sun. The rains rain for every artist, but not every artist rain with the rains. Vachele, Honorable Vice President, artists, stop bickering, start pondering, start organizing, stop tissues, start issues, stop. Stop singing. Start thinking.
The Culture Week was held under the theme Celebrating Arts and Cultural Entrepreneurship. Reporting for Studio 7 in Chinoy, this is Atach Goriwa.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
a closer look at failing opposition parties in Zimbabwe with Tatenda Gumbo.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Saying these are unprecedented and difficult times for football, soccer's governing body embattled FIFA president Sepp Blatter publicly addressed the corruption scandal for the first time today. Speaking at the opening ceremonies for FIFA's annual congress in Zurich, Switzerland, Blatter said that the arrests and indictments handed down Wednesday cast a shadow over the organization and its meetings in Zurich.
Burundi's Catholic Church says it is withdrawing its support of the country's upcoming elections after weeks of political unrest.
Human rights groups say there has been a surge of executions in Saudi Arabia.
U.S. Defense Secretary Ash Carter says Thursday that defense officials are looking at ways to enhance efforts to train and equip pro-government forces in Iraq as they battle Islamic State fighters.
And conservationists say the elephant population in Mozambique has shrunk nearly 50% in the past 5 years because of poaching, even as it grows elsewhere.
The current infighting within Zimbabwe's leading political parties has raised questions about the political landscape and opposition politics in Zimbabwe. The MDC renewal team has in recent days seen some high tensions after Treasurer General Elton Mangoma alleged that the party's leadership is promoting internal squabbles. He is accused of allegedly having an extramarital affair with an MDC renewal activist's wife. Attention has also gripped President Robert Mugabe's party, which has expelled several senior officials said to be backing deposed former Vice President Joyce Mujuru, who allegedly wanted to topple the president. Despite this political turbulence in these parties, some opposition parties are sprouting in the country as critics say ZANU-PF opponents are too divided to remove it from power. There are 10 opposition parties in Zimbabwe, including Progressive Democrats of Zimbabwe, Zimbabwe First, Transform Zimbabwe, and the newly formed Zimbabweans United for Democracy, among others. Will all these parties manage to remove ZANU-PF from power? For perspective, reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke to David Ntlovu, ZANU-PF Central Committee member, and Moses Nkomo, lawyer in Transform Zimbabwe Glenview South parliamentary by-election candidate. Nkomo says ZANU-PF and the MDC formations have left the landscape wide open for a country looking for change.
Zimbabwe needs a new culture of politics that is based on transparency, tolerance, respect for diversity, that is based on service.
Mr. Ndlovu, if you would come in there, looking at the role of opposition politics in Zimbabwe as a ZANU-PF Central Committee member, what's your view on the emerging political parties in Zimbabwe?
Which political parties?
We have a few. There's Transform Zimbabwe, for example, from Mr. Moses Nkomo here. There's Progressive Democrats of Zimbabwe. There's another one called Zimbabwe First.
You know, people should not form political parties for the sake of forming political parties. Throughout the whole world, there are only two political parties. One either represents the social ideas of socialism or the capitalist ideas and is being used by capitalists to propagate their ideology. So some people can be used by capitalist parties. Whether there's 1,000 parties or not, what I know is that One is either an oppressor or oppressed. Those are the two main political parties. So I don't believe in a multitude of political parties.
Mr. Nkomo, your response there?
Yeah, I think that's a misguided conclusion, because socialism and capitalism are simply systems of economics, and they're not even, strictly speaking, political systems. They are economic systems within which politics operates. But we believe, coming home to Zimbabwe, Zimbabwe needs a new culture of politics. New in the sense that we have a ruling party which describes itself appropriately as a liberation movement. And its mandate, which we acknowledge and respect, was to liberate the country. And that was done in 1980. Now, in the 21st century, we need a political system that is up to date with the 21st century dynamics of society.
Let me just have Mr. Ndlovu come and respond to what you're saying there, the issue that ZANU-PF itself is not able to carry on its mandate.
One thing, ZANU-PF, or let me say, ZAPU and ZANU were not merely formed to liberate the country and end there. We're clear when we fought for this country as to what we intended doing, that is to return the land to the people of Zimbabwe, to eliminate all forms of evil, racial discrimination, which was being propounded by the British government and that next of kin in Zimbabwe. And since 1980, we have ruled this country according to what we had agreed. So it is neither there or there for people to say ZANU-PF was not mandated to rule the country.
But Mr. Ndlovu, Mr. Nkomo is saying that ZANU-PF itself is not running the country properly now.
ZANU-PF is still striking against the world imperialism as a party. They are representatives in Zimbabwe in the form of political parties or opposition political parties. Opposition to what? So ZANU-PF is still in the struggle. You know, let me put it this way. ZANU-PF up to date is still a mass movement party. It is comprised of people from all classes, and those social classes are in ZANU-PF, and they will struggle within ZANU-PF to fulfill their mandate as social classes.
And Mr. Nkomo, I'll come back to you. Your response?
It's not just the MDC that is fighting. ZANU-PF itself is burning its imploding. The MDCs, the renewal team, are imploding, which is why it is necessary for a new party which comes with a clear mandate. And as Transform Zimbabwe, we are very clear as to what Zimbabwe needs to take it forward. We promise strong principles of leadership, prosperity based on an open, inclusive and competitive economy, a new culture of politics, like I mentioned earlier on, and the ability to unlock the potential which is in human beings.
Mr. Ndlovu, looking at the electorate in Zimbabwe, will they buy what Mr. Nkomo is saying?
People of Zimbabwe have seen it through. Those who participated in the struggle, those who know what Zimbabwe is all about, those who know that political emancipation is not about forming a political party, which is not based on ideology. There is no one can distinguish politics and economics. They're just the same, because politics is based on the economic system. And then for them, it seems like it's 40-for-1 to think it can transform something which is already there. It's not possible.
That was David Ndlovu, ZANU-PF Central Committee member, and Moses Nkomo, a lawyer in Transform Zimbabwe Glenview South parliamentary by-election candidate, speaking with Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo.
A Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, Shannon Smith of the U.S. State Department, insists sanctions on Zimbabwe are not the cause of Zimbabwe's economic decline.
U.S. sanctions are aimed at fewer than 200 individuals and institutions in Zimbabwe, in a nation of over 13 million people. They are very targeted. And the Zimbabwe economy is absolutely struggling. That was a clear message that we heard from people on our visit there. But for explanations, I would point to the World Bank's Ease of Doing Business report, where Zimbabwe is in the bottom 20 countries in the world in terms of ease of countries being able to make investments and do business and operate.
Tune in tomorrow for more of Blessing Zulu's interview with the Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, Shannon Smith, on her recent visit to Zimbabwe.
In our mailbag tonight, we received these messages from you, our listeners.
Hello, my name is Bright Gumo, I'm from Glenview 8. My first issue is on the education system in Zimbabwe. I think you all know that the pass rate is always less than 40%, sometimes going to even 18%. I have a couple of solutions of my own, and I don't know why the Korea hasn't done anything about it. Introducing core subjects. A core subject is a subject that the maximum grade is a C, and it's not as hard as other papers, but then it tests a certain standard. So introducing those papers would actually help. A lot of people are not good in specific subjects. Of course, you cannot take a core subject to A level, but that's not important, because you can actually do the other subjects which are not core at A level. So you just need a couple of subjects, maybe 3 or 4 core subjects, then the other 4 can be extended so that you have something to do at O level and you actually have 5 O levels. That's simple. And the other thing is introducing a Form 5 after Form 4 and before Law 6. It helps as students to do O level in 5 years and actually polish up their grades without pressure from their parents that you failed last year and you have to pass this year again. You know, there's actually no pressure because they know that they're writing for the first time in their fifth year in high school. And that helps a lot, you know, psychologically and mentally. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Bright. Remember to send your audio messages at this WhatsApp number, 0202. And I take that number again, 01202-465-0318. That number again, 01202-465-0318.
South African officials have reacted to a US indictment that says top South African officials bribed world football officials to secure the 2010 World Cup. More from Anita Powell in Johannesburg.
That was the sound of South Africa's 2010 World Cup, the insistent buzz of the now famous Vuvuzela. But South African officials have made little noise at all in response to the U.S. indictment that asserts, among other things, that South Africa bribed FIFA officials to host that historic tournament. The charges by U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch led to the arrest Wednesday of 14 FIFA officials and executives who are accused of collectively taking more than $150 million in bribes. Lynch's 164-page indictment outlines a scenario in which former FIFA Vice President Jack Warner sent an intermediary to Paris to collect a briefcase stuffed with dollars from a South African official. The indictment does not single out any South African by name. When contacted by VOA seeking comment on the indictment, South African presidential spokesman Harold Moloka passed the ball to the sports ministry. Sports Minister Fikile Mbalula says, according to official records, no such payment came from the ministry or the government.
Our financial records and books for the 2010 and 11 financial years and those before and after the period of the World Cup have been audited by the Auditor General of South Africa, and no such amount has been found on our books.
South Africa's top opposition party has already turned the scandal into a political football. The Democratic Alliance's shadow minister of sports is Solly Malatsi, who was quick to criticize the man who was widely thought to be at the center of these sideline deals, Danny Jordan, the head of the local organizing committee for the 2010 World Cup.
These sparking allegations, you know, they are serious allegations which should be probed. You know, they cannot be swept under the carpet. So what we will be doing as the official opposition is that today we have written a letter to the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Sport and Recreation asking her to immediately summon SAFA under the leadership of Dr. Denis Jordan to the Portfolio Committee to provide an explanation on these allegations.
He said the party believes a bribe to FIFA could not have been paid without the knowledge of senior officials on South Africa's bid committee. Jordan was recently named executive mayor of the Nelson Mandela Bay metropolitan area by the ruling African National Congress. He was due to be endorsed Thursday. Calls to the mayor's office went unanswered. The revelations are especially disheartening to South Africans who thought that the first ever World Cup on African soil was the product of so-called Madiba magic. Madiba is the clan name used to describe former President Nelson Mandela, whose charismatic personality had a galvanizing effect on South African sports. By the time the World Cup came to South Africa, Mr. Mandela was ill and virtually housebound, making one brief appearance at the tournament final. A spokesman at the Nelson Mandela Foundation declined to comment on the indictment. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk when we will be talking about the ruling by the Constitutional Court ordering police to stop arresting women suspected to be prostitutes.
And now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.